better listen very carefully.
A good martial artist does not become tense, but ready.
Essentially, at this point, the fight is over.
So you pretty much flow with the goal.
Who is worthy to be trusted with the secret to limitless power?
I'm ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Bulletproof for BJJ podcast. I am JT.
Hey guys, I'm Joey. Are you not going to say some funny shit today?
What? Got to mix it up, man. I can't.
I was like flexing, getting ready. I'm like, come on, motherfucker.
Yeah, you ready to play that tennis game? Yeah. This is Mixmaster Mike. Y'all know who it is. My friends, leg locks have changed the game. And this is the discussion about how is that reflected in jiu-jitsu? What has been the biggest change in the last 10 years? I'm going to say the popularization of leg locks. What would you say, Joey?
Well, I suppose looking at it like wide-ranging view, there would be some of our listeners out there who have only come into jiu-jitsu since leg locks have been a thing.
Yeah.
Come into it and like, oh, Gordon Ryan, Danaher Death Squad.
Yeah.
Like
those guys.
All you know is, you know, leg locks are just the thing. We should talk a little bit about the days preceding that when, you know, that whole thing of like in Brazil, leg locks were like frowned upon.
It's a bit dirty.
Yeah. And What was the thing? Like if you did a leg lock at a competition, you'd often get booed by the crowd.
Yeah.
Like it was a real dirty technique.
Yeah. But I mean, we can dig into that. But that's like a little bit of like imperialism within jiu-jitsu because that's a very much a Gracie thing.
Yeah, they didn't. There was a Lucha Livre thing. They were using the leg locks, weren't they?
They were. And also Father, who is like one of the forefathers of jiu-jitsu, was teaching leg locks in the favela.
Right. But the Gracies weren't doing that.
The Gracies went up on that because maybe their rich clients did not want to have their feet ripped off.
And understandable.
Well, it is what it is.
Simplify it for me. How have leg locks changed the way jiu-jitsu plays now?
Well, I think originally there was a time when your jiu-jitsu game for gi and no gi could be similar.
Yep.
I think that was true from, you know, the 90s through to like even early 2000s to 2010. Look at a guy like Marcelo Garcia. He actually only trained no gi 20% of the time. He mainly trained gi and he just adapted his gi game to his no gi game. And that was fine because there was a time when you could do that. Then there was a critical point where, and you know, the ADCC had always included leg locks and the highest percentage finish throughout was leg locks and probably.
Oh, really?
And funnily enough, Marcelo Garcia won the absolute with a heel hook.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It's a famous match where I can't remember the guy, he's fighting huge fat unit and he's trying to get his back. He's holding his hips. He's kicking his
legs. Not Rico Rodriguez. Not that one. He was the UFC fighter.
He gets dumped. Really big fat unit.
Okay. Rico's heavyweight, not fat though. Yeah.
He has the guy's back and the guy back slams him.
Oh, yeah, it's Rico.
And headbutts him.
Yep.
And then Marcelo is like, oh, like I think the slam technically might be legal or not. I'm not sure.
It's a dirty move.
But he kind of headbutts him and Marcelo's like, you fucking what? And then like I've never seen Marcelo do a leg lock in my life. He's like back to – he does a sweep, comes up to pass, and just throws on the outside heel hook and twists his leg off. It's mad.
Nice.
It's so good. And, you know, Dean Lister really is the most successful leg locker in ADCC history.
Yeah.
Just because he has the most finishes from heel hook. So that's not that long ago. That's in that 2000 to 2010 era.
Yeah.
But there was a time when the IBJJF banned reaping. Still do, unless you're doing – they've now changed the rules.
You can reap in no-gi.
In no-gi, brown and black. But that's because there was a spate of injuries.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people having knee surgeries as a result. So they were
just
like,
from the action of reaping?
Yeah.
Or was it the reaping and then associated like heel hook attack or something?
It wasn't a heel hook attack. It was like, say, people going for a straight foot lock and reaping or trying to sweep from that.
Yeah.
And people getting knee injuries. But funnily enough, I think it was not just the fact that it was in the gi, but people were just not familiar. They weren't turning or they weren't going with it and that was creating problems. So then it was like, oh, we're not allowed to do that. And then the development of the game wasn't so much there. It was there in MMA. You know, leg locks are available. Frank Shamrock, you know, back in the early days of Pancrase, They were doing heel hooks. They were doing knee bars.
Yep.
Submission wrestling types. It's all about twisting the ankles and the
catch
knees.
Catch wrestling.
Catch wrestling.
Yep. Josh Barnett.
Josh Barnett.
Loved a leg lock.
Of course. And brutal MMA fighter too.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing.
So they're always around. It just wasn't. It wasn't exist. Culturally wasn't as much of a part in jiu-jitsu.
And it wasn't made popular. And I don't want to misspeak on who really owned this, but like Dean Lister, but then you also got to go to Eddie Cummings was really – he was the
– Oh, yeah.
Eddie Cummings was the guy before Danaher. Like he trained under Danaher, but really the inside word is Danaher showed some leg lock stuff, but Eddie Cummings is the guy who really invented the leg lock system and had – and ended up falling out with Danaher and leaving – but the whole leg lock system that Tonnen and Gordon Ryan and even stuff that Craig does to this day is derivative of what Eddie Cummings was doing, you know.
How about that?
10 years ago, whatever.
Wow. And Eddie Cummings was – most of his fights were through – was it Eddie Bravo's comps? Was that where
– EBI, but he also EBI, did Polaris.
Okay.
Any number of super fights.
Not competitive anymore, is he?
You don't seem so much. He's a fairly eccentric guy and also a prickly guy.
Right.
So he has a tendency to not get on with people. He went across. He was at Unity for a while. He was teaching them all how to do leg locks, and then you don't see him there so much. I'm not sure because I've never met Eddie and I don't say anything bad about him. I admire his game because I feel he's a true innovator. And a lot of stuff we see now, even – like the stuff that Lachlan Giles has done, and I witnessed both him and Craig working together on their respective leg lock games. You know, they had a look at what DDS was doing. And they said, well, you got guys who are wrestling and doing leg locks, and they're smashing people.
Yeah.
You got to take a page out of that book.
DDS is the Danaher Death Squad, which is obviously for the initiated. Oh, well, yeah, they're no longer.
Now defunct.
The band formerly known as. But for the newer listeners, that was a... They were probably like part of that explosion of no-gi jiu-jitsu and heel-hooks, weren't they?
Yeah.
Which, you know, and if you listen to Danaher, which I think is a very worthwhile listen to him when he's on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yes.
And he's shout out to Joe, thanks for tuning in today.
Appreciate it.
But he talks about how he was influenced to look deeper into leg locks by Dean Lister.
Yes.
Dean Lister, he said famously, why would you ignore 50% of the body?
Yes, exactly.
And it's an amazing statement. A question because it's like, well, yeah, it's absurd. The way jiu-jitsu played, like my style of jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
And the way that it played out in that more old school sense was you have to get past the guard.
Yes.
And then you control the upper body and then you attack the upper body.
Upper body, yes.
So it's an arm bar or it's a triangle or you're taking the back and choking, right, a collar choke, whatever. Whereas if you don't worry about all that and you just attack the legs, like you're already there, the legs are already there.
Yeah.
It's an amazing shortcut.
Indeed.
And it changes how – it changes the game because instead of needing to get to this upper body control, dominant position, you're like, well, I'm just going to fall to guard and attack your leg. Like it's – you know, and if you can be – if you can do that more effectively and the other person doesn't have a defense for it, fuck me, you saved yourself a lot of energy.
So efficient. And another thing I want to shout out is like Eddie Bravo. Shout out 10th Planet System. Eddie Bravo was playing with a lot of interesting leg lock stuff from lockdown, you know, vaporizer, electric chair.
Vaporizer.
People.
Best names for his techniques.
The THC guard. No, it's one of those things that.
And Nate put me in a fucking electric chair the other day.
I know.
I was like, bruh, fuck you, man.
Dirty scumbag.
Yeah. Horrible position to be in.
Oh, it cranks the ligaments.
Yeah.
Full respect to those savage 10th Planet practitioners. Eddie was the one who really went, nah, I'm just doing no-gi. He was really the first guy. I mean, he did have a period where he would wear...
Separatist. He was the pioneering separatist.
He kind of was, yeah. He had the gi pants, but he'd wear the rashi.
Yeah.
But he was the guy who was like, nah, my whole style is no-gi.
Yeah.
And I feel that if we look, even though I'm sure there's plenty of people throughout the history of jiu-jitsu who have taken more that path, he was the one who created a whole popular system around it. And... there's now some incredible practitioners who are out of the 10th Planet system.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Who just have wild, wild no-gi games. But I feel where Danaher's Death Squad crew really rose to prominence was through EBI. Gary Tonnen beat everyone. lightweights, welterweights. I think he even won the heavyweight title at some point.
Really?
Yeah.
It was before G. Ryan stepped on the scene?
But then G. Ryan was coming up under the wings of Tom DeBlas and Gary.
Right.
And then he came through and he won it. The format actually suited them, and that's why Eddie leaned more towards combat.
I was always a fan of the straight footlock.
Yes.
I remember my first coach, Dan, that took me to brown belt. He liked them. He had some really good insights on the straight footlock, I remember, at a time when straight footlocks were like, oh, you just wrap and then you kind of do the double just wrist lock and then you just go for it. But, yeah. You know, he had some like little modifications that technicality you could say, which these days is like, that's all jiu-jitsu is like, you got to know these tiny little details, right?
Yes.
But back then it was like almost if someone got on an ankle lock, you just... I don't know. It was almost like you just tapped because you're like, yeah. Oh, they've got me.
Oh.
Like jiu-jitsu seemed a bit more like that.
Break my foot.
Yeah. I remember going when I went to Brazil as a blue belt.
Mm.
It's a cool story for you young whippersnappers out there. I went to the De La Riva Academy.
Hey.
So I'm in Rio and I'd been training at Carlson Gracie and I checked out Checkmat. And then I'm like, oh, wow, there's the De La Riva. And it's like it's a gym, like a fitness gym.
Yeah.
And then they got like a little room to the side and there's a sign out in the street and it's like, De La Riva. And you're like, oh, wow.
What do you know?
De La Riva. Like, probably a lot of people don't even know that he was a guy.
Yes.
It's not just, an obscure name of the guard.
Ricardo De La Riva is a guy, yeah.
So I walked in there and saw the timetable and I was like, oh, class tonight. And I went back and there is De La Riva. And
he said, hey, himself.
Welcome to class. Yeah, he said, how are you? Man, great. Great to be here. He said, yeah, jump on the mats. And it was a small class. I think he had like two or three black belts and then like a couple of blue belts. It was pretty small. And I remember it was the first gym I went to where the air conditioning was pumping. It was so crispy cool in there.
Oh, nice.
I was like, damn, this is plush because it's fucking humid.
So humid.
The gyms are real sweaty, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm rolling with one of his black belts, an older guy. And, you know, we're having a nice exchange, whatever. And then the guy leaves his foot out there and I jump on this straight foot lock and I fucking tap the dude.
Ah.
And I'm like, fuck yeah. Just come to De La Riva's Academy. I'm a blue belt. I tap this black belt.
Taking names.
Things are looking up for Joey. And this fucking guy just brought hell down upon me.
Oh.
For the next like 5 minutes. He just fucking bashed
deservedly.
Me.
Deservedly.
Yeah. And
how
dare you? And when I got him with the foot, like he tapped, and then he said, oh, nice. He's like, we don't use this technique a lot here. And I was like, oh, whatever, old man.
So cop that,
Mumbo. And then he proceeded to communicate how he felt about it for the next, 5 minutes. And guy fucking bashed me. Anyway, I stuck around there for a week or so and had some really great training with that gentleman. His name is Elvesio Penna.
Okay.
Who I once saw a meme of Elvesio.
Right.
And it was...
Is he the older, super jacked guy?
Super jacked, gray hair.
I know this
competes
guy.
Competes in the adult division.
Yeah, he's like, a beast.
And we're in the change rooms after and one of the other guys like, hey, how'd you go? Yeah, blah, blah. And he's like, hey, you know Elvesio here? He's like, man, this guy still competes adult division. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, he was like... maybe in his 50s. And he's like, yeah, I still compete adult division. I'm like, hey, guys, like, I fuck him up. Like,
yeah,
I'm good.
He's a beast.
Yeah. And I was like, holy shit. And then I saw, years ago, this meme of him. And it was like, 55 years old, still competes in adult division. Hashtag respect. And I was like, that's the guy.
It is the guy.
But it just, it was just interesting. Like, culturally, I was like, yeah, footlocks are a thing. And for him, he's like, nah, we don't do that.
No.
And he saw that as a great disrespect.
Yeah.
So it was like, fascinating.
Interesting. So the way I've had it explained to me, Osvaldo Fardo, provided I'm getting that right, I hope I'm getting that right, apologies if I've gotten that wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm up on that. Osvaldo Fardo, he was teaching in the favelas and he didn't have the rich clientele and he was very pro footlock. Gracie's were not. Gracie were more self-defense, doing more combat stuff. But it wasn't about the leg locks. That wasn't the Gracie style. The Gracie style got popular and that's what we kind of came to know through UFC fame. But there were all these guys, super savage guys, who did do footlocks. And Comprido, who was a champion at one stage, he was absolute champion kind of before Hodge Gracie's time, but around a similar time, he won with a footlock, like a toe hold, in the final, maybe of the absolute or the heavyweight final, against a very famous guard player called Holeta. And Holeta had beaten Saulo Barreiro.
Okay.
And that's how...
Saulo was like one of the toughest dudes
He was
of
one
time,
of the tough dudes of the late 90s, early 2000s. Yep. And people got booed and got upset. Comprido used to bleach his hair and then dye it a color for comp. He's kind of famous for that. And so the foot's up in the air and he just grabs it and rips it. And the guy just taps. he doesn't even bother passing the guard, and people are like, oh, what? You can't do that. But you could. Toehold's legit. And he was just like, yeah, look at me now. I'm the champ. And it's real. And the interesting thing for me is the evolution of guards then leads to the evolution of other things. So if we look at the evolution of De La Riva, and De La Riva is an extension of De La Riva, is Birumbolo.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that is a transition essentially, but that helps people get to the back. That is an outside leg position. A lot of the reaping, you know, whether it be 50-50 or saddle or 411, whatever you want to call it, reaping the leg, controlling the leg, is an inside leg position.
Right.
They are counters to each other. The outside leg position is a counter to the inside.
Ah,
the inside leg position is a counter to the outside leg position.
Okay, so simmer that back for me. So inside leg position, like a 50-50?
Sorry,
that's outside.
Saddle is inside.
Saddle's inside.
You can have one in, one out, depending on how you classify, right, to control the leg or the hip.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is this. If you're doing no-gi and you've been trying to do like – it's hard to do birumbolos in no-gi. But if you turn to do a birumbolo and you have stiff ankles, they can toe hold your foot very easily.
Yeah.
If you go to put your De La Riva hook in very deep, you can get knee barred real quick.
Yeah, right.
You know, if someone's very attacking on leg locks from the top, this starts to nullify this guard position.
Yes.
So this is just –
because you're sticking your feet and your legs into these round –
You're putting yourself into an entanglement.
Yeah.
Which is a problem. Also, back in the day, people used to pass on their knees.
Yes.
Low, tight, all of that. Then there was a point at which people started to stand more and move more in that way. Now, I'm not sure of the exact kind of archaeology of, you know, at what point that changed. But when you stand and walk into someone's guard, if they can do leg locks, you're giving them your legs.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So then it's interesting that at a certain point, certain people started doing leg locks and started kicking everyone's ass. And one of the most famous cases, as I love to tell, is Lockie getting bronze at the ADCC. And it was simply guard retention and heel hooks. And that's how he won against much bigger, technically better opponents, because they didn't understand the skill set and they got murked.
They fucking did.
You know?
Tell us that story for those who didn't watch that. Was that 3 years ago now?
Yeah, 2019.
Yeah.
So Lachlan Giles, I feel like, okay, he gets his shine now, which I'm very happy about. But at the time,
he's been on the podcast too. If you haven't heard him speak, go back and check that episode. It's about 20 episodes ago.
Yeah, it's a good one. I think it's episode 41. Essentially, I've known Lachlan since he was probably purple belt, brown belt, and just seen he used to do birumbolos and stuff. I actually remember him winning brown belt absolute with birumbolos, and everyone was like, "What's that movie keeps doing where he takes everyone's back? That's crazy." But he was always looking at the new stuff, always, always. And both he and Craig were looking at what was going on in America and how the guys at DDS were doing and how Eddie Cummings was doing. And it's like, man, these guys are doing leg locks. These guys are doing wrestling. And they're beating the Brazilians. It's crazy. So they started working on their own game. Craig had his game. Lockie had his game. And Craig never really gave Lockie credit for how much he helped him. But Craig got famous through beating Leandro Lowe. He heel hooked Leandro Lowe, broke his leg, took his back, and then choked him.
Leandro didn't tap to the heel hook, did
he? No, and so that meant Lowe couldn't move. And so Craig knew that he couldn't move so he could take the back on that side and take his back, and that he knew the best way to get him is to choke him.
That was a huge fight.
It was a massive upset that made Craig. But then Craig did a kind of jumping slash flying triangle on Murillo Santana and finished that, which is also big. He also, I believe, I don't know if he choked or heel hooked Chael Sonnen in the absolute.
But anyone could do that, so who cares?
But no. From then on, you know, Uncle Chael was always loving Craig's nuts. Yeah. But that was a breakout moment, you know, and Lockie was coaching him at that time.
Yep.
And then both of them, there's plenty of Australian innovators who've pushed the ADCC path. But what I wanted to say
is – interesting you say. I've never seen – I love Craig's shit. Like, I love his Instagram. I've never seen him mention Lockie.
I do not.
I know you don't.
Because, like, there's been, like, only very few times. And he said this kind of tongue-in-cheek. You know, he's a joking guy. He was on the Matt Byrne podcast. I said, oh, well, you know, Craig, we don't really know you. Like, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm the most famous guy. I never won anything. And they're like, oh, who gave you your black belt? He's like, oh, Lachlan Giles. Don't worry about him. He's a fake black belt. I was like – the disrespect.
Wow.
Like, he's joking
it's
around.
It's a joke, but yeah, it's kind
but
of.
But he's like, yeah, yeah, whatever. That guy's nothing.
That's mean.
Yeah, I was like, God, that's rough. But we can go there.
Is there was there some kind of bad blood there?
No, not at all. Just no, they're friends. Yeah. They're actually friends. Right. I don't know how. Lachlan's a nice guy. Craig's not, but they get on very well.
Right.
You know, there's a huge respect there.
A bit like you and me.
Well, no, I feel like you're a brother. I put up with you. It's a blood thing. what can I do? And plus, everybody mistakes me for you, man. So it's like, you know, if you weren't around and people started calling me Joey, I'd get upset.
Joey, man, you're so fucking funny on the show, bro. I love your shit. Where's JT at? Is he here anyway? Who cares?
Does he still do jiu-jitsu? So at the ADCC, that whole probably 12 months, 18 months leading up, Lachlan was just focused on leg locks, wrestling, and guard retention.
Right.
That's all we did, like, in terms of what he wanted to work on. We could work on whatever we wanted, but I was in
so
the
training every, with him in the lead up to that.
Every day. We did an ADCC class specifically to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Because the ADCC is every 2 years. So, like, with all the different things that had happened, he's like, this is what I'm going to do. And we fully expected that Lachlan was going to dark horse the lightweight category.
Yeah.
He had a breakout event at Kinectic, which was like a Polaris-type event, teams event, and BJJ Fanatics had their own team. It was Lachlan, Gordon, Nicky Rod, Edwin Najmi, and Craig.
Yep.
Lachlan
in on a team together?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a crazy good team, right? Like, no one's beaten that team. Yep. All the other teams were maybe a fraction piecemeal to that. Lachlan went out and submitted a whole team by himself.
Dead set.
Yeah, he submitted five guys. Not all by heel hook, but one by armbar, but the rest of them by heel hook.
Amazing.
Yeah, and some of them were big dudes. And I remember watching that going, God. And one of the guys he beat is a guy called Mansha Kerr, who is a great guy. He's a black belt, great black belt by under Marcelo Garcia, left Marcelo, went to Unity, but had lost to Eddie Cummings. I believe he hadn't been tapped. He wouldn't tap to a leg lock. Lachlan had changed.
Clearly, they don't work.
No, it's impossible. But Lachlan had changed his style of leg lock, which is more of a bridge. It was less of a rotational torque. It was like you lock the leg off and you bridge into the knee, which is savage. He did this to Mancha and he exploded his knee.
Oh, wow.
Mancha didn't want to tap and Lachlan's like, I'm doing it. And that was revenge because Lachie had lost to Mancha at Worlds No Gi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Dude, I watched a Lachie fight on YouTube
against big
Haisam Rita.
Yeah, and
it was an MA1 comp.
Both knees.
Yeah, they did two rounds where it's like first round Lachie heel hooks him, second round he
blows out the other knee.
You're like, oh, and Haisam Rita, he's one of the most exciting.
So athletic.
Yeah, I was like, fucking hell, Lachie's in for it here.
No,
man, just nullified him.
Yeah, right. It's incredible to think that you get the leverage of two legs around one leg and it's game over.
Yeah.
And Lachlan is an absolute technician. His attention to detail is incredible. So I saw what he did at that Kinectic comp. And like, so Craig and I think maybe Gordon might have come out or they put Nicky out. But like, Lachlan took out a whole team. Okay, you can have a rest and put someone else in. So, you know, team BJJ Fanatics won and two or three members of the team didn't even compete.
Wow.
And I remember that going,
that's
wow,
my kind of comp.
This is incredible. Yeah, Joey's on the side like, yeah, do that work.
I'm happy to take a rest round, bro. You go.
Yeah.
Bro, do the leg lock. JT. Lock it up, my man. All right, I forgot again. Let's go.
Actually, Lachie does take rest rounds because he's a sensible guy. But anyway, I was convinced going into ADCC that would happen. What actually happened is Lucas Lepre, first round, Lachlan Giles versus Lucas Lepre. Lucas Lepre shuts Lachlan Giles down. You're not getting under me. You're not getting around me. Absolutely knew he was going to try and do this.
Yeah.
Eventually passes Lachlan's guard and does a freaky back take, like just a back take. You're like, where did he pull that from?
Yeah.
And I don't think he finishes, or maybe he does choke Lachlan from the back.
Fuck, Lepre is good.
We're like, oh, all our dreams are shattered. And like, we were gutted because we were so convinced Lachlan was going to do big things. And, you know, Craig's doing well. Craig's beating a bunch of dudes. He's on to the finals, just cutting sick, finishing everybody. Not necessarily leg locking, but getting their back, choking them, doing a bunch. And It was a great tournament, but I was there for the conversation, and this is where it's kind of cool to be there. Just very lucky. Moa Sim is out the back in the warm-up area. Simon Carson's there. Livia Giles is there.
Moa Sim, he runs ADCC.
He owns the ADCC.
Right.
And is the event organizer, and he's looking for names for the absolute. And they take four people from each weight category. And he just says, like, on a whim, hey, Lockie, like, you know, do you want to do the absolute? And Lockie's like, oh, I don't know. And Mo says, hey, man, like, if you do well, you get a free invitation back. I'll invite you. You won't have to qualify. Now, Lockie went through a real fuck around to make that. He flew to Kazakhstan, and then they withdrew the selection tickets for his weight category.
Oh,
they
wow. Only,
they said, oh, it's a selection event. Psych, it's not.
He was already there.
Yeah. Like, wow. Everyone was already flying into Lockie won that. And then I think he had to go to Singapore and win that to get his tickets.
Right.
So there's a lot of time and money to qualify. So he says to Lachlan, bro, if you go in this and you do well, I'll give you a free invitation back. Lachlan's like, that's good enough for me. And I was like, yes, Lachlan, do it. It'll be like Kinectic. You're going to smoke all these big fools. Yeah. And Livia's like, Lockie, it's absolute. You can get smashed. Even Simon Carson's like, dude, that's not a good idea. I wouldn't do that. And I was like, yes, do it. Do it. Like, and Lachlan's like, yeah, I'm in. And it was just like a whim. He wasn't even like thinking about it.
Wow.
First round, he's fighting Kynan. Kynan Duarte.
Who had won his division.
Just won heavyweight. And smoked everyone.
Yeah.
Like easily.
The worst matchup.
Oh, God. It was just one of those things where you're like, your heart sinks a little bit. But in my head, I was like, oh, I don't know. I was just hoping. You know, we're all the way there. And we're sitting around a bunch of Atos guys. And they're like, it's over, dude. It's Kynan, dude. He's the greatest. It's over. I'm like, fuck you, SoCal suckers. Like, just really polite, nice. They'd been nice to us all day. Hey, would you like a soda? Yeah. Fuck you.
Hey, man, you want a bite of my burrito?
You into edibles? Dude, that was lovely,
guys. Shout out to California listeners. We love you guys.
Yeah, no, I love Atos, by the way. Shout out. Like,
and I fucking love California.
Good dudes. All of them. Like, the Rotolo brothers, they were so lovely.
Yeah.
They're great guys. But me being the competitive person I am, they're like, no, dude, Kynan, Silver. And I was like, fuck you guys. Lockie Giles, inside heel hook from 50-50. And I was like, nah, flipping them off. Like, most ungracious, bogan, savage Australian.
You didn't know. JT gets kind of hyped,
dude,
in certain situations. I can only imagine that this was one
I was of them. Out of control. I was like Will Ferrell in a bad movie just destroying the set. I thought you said bad cop, bad cop. I saw where you had it and I just had to take it up a level. Man, and very quickly, inside of 2 minutes, Kynan just leaves his leg out there and Lockie's like looking at him. Kynan's looking over at like at Galvan, like, oh, what do I do here? And Lockie just puts it on, bro. He spins and next thing you know, tap, 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 Kynan's tapping. Whole stadium explodes. That is the upset of the tournament. If Lockie did nothing else, that would have made his name.
Yeah.
We're all just running through the stadium, going crazy. We run down there. Lockie walked off like nothing. He's like, is this a dream? Like, yeah. What just happened? And we were just like,
he was mellow after those fights.
He was so chill. He was just like, man, that was weird, hey? And we were like, what? You just beat the heavyweight world champion, bro. We were losing it. We were so G'd. On the other mat, Patrick Gaudio is fighting another top Atos guy. His name escapes me. It'll come to me in a second. And it's a war. 20-minute war, overtime, no points, takedown war, and fights to the death. Patrick Gaudio wins at the death with a takedown. Splits his head, exhausted. You guys have probably had that experience where you've had a comp fight, you're lying on the ground, you've given it everything. They're like, you're on in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So just like, 10 minutes, Patrick, let's go. And Lockie's just standing there fresh as a daisy. And I was like, God, there could be a repeat here. I was like, wow, it could have happened. We get kicked out. But we've got badges. No, get out. You're not competing. Fuck.
Oh, you're like down on the like.
Yeah,
the
we're down on the floor. We're in the area. I mean, buddy, everyone's there. All the famous guys are there. But Seth Daniels kicks us out because he's a staunch mother and I don't want to fight him. So we're back up in the stands and now he's fighting Patrick Gaudio. And it's actually his hardest fight. Like Patrick almost passes him. I've gone back and watched it a couple times. Like Lockie almost gets his guard passed three times.
Wow.
And Patrick is a heavyweight world champion and a beast. And then same kind of spot, gets to that backside 50-50 from K-Guard, and Patrick doesn't want to tap. So when Lockie rolls, Lockie said his knee popped like four times.
Yeah, Patrick had that big...
He's like, ah!
Like big, yeah.
And he couldn't get up off the floor.
Iconic kind of like final moment, yeah.
Oh, it's brutal. And he can't stand up. Like his knee is legitimately bad. And it's like two times. And so we run down again. But that sets up the match between him and Gordon Ryan. And...
Nah.
Yeah.
Muhammad.
No. He fights Gordon Ryan. Wait.
Ah.
I was there, Joe. Joe's like, nah, bro. I've watched the
fight. I know we're going overtime, bro. That's shit. You have to cut a whole computer out of it.
Nah, come on. This is meant to be the long episode, bro. Go there. Stick with me. You asked me to tell a story. I'm going to tell a story. You fucking put your feet up, son. Get the popcorn. This is my best jiu-jitsu story.
Someone bring
time.
Me some acai, Jules. Acai.
Chop, chop. But long story short, it is Lockie versus Gordon. And everyone's like, oh, it ends here. You know, it's going to be over. Like, Gordon's beaten everyone. You can't beat him. But at a critical point, and this is the cool thing, it was so exciting that everyone gathered around the mat. Even Seth Daniels didn't even bother to kick anyone out. Like, Hoyler Gracie is standing next to me like, oh. Like, it's like
wow.
Backyard fights. Everybody's like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And Tom DeBlas was very close to us. And Gordon's leaving his legs in there. And Tom DeBlas is going, what's he doing? He's playing with fire. This guy is on a leg lock tear. And why? I wouldn't do that. He's like, fuck, my boy's playing with fire. And Lockie reaches for the heel and just he slips. And then Gordon's like, no, 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 no. Pulls the legs out, gets low, gets tight, crushes, over-unders, passes, stacks. And eventually gets Lockie's back and chokes his face off. But it takes him 9 minutes. Lockie had a crease across his face, like a bruise cut like this.
Oh, wow.
From Gordon choking his face off. Brutal. But that sets up the match between Gordon Ryan and Bruschetta, which is infinitely boring, and the classic, classic giant David versus Goliath, Muhammad Ali, the biggest guy in the tournament, versus Lachlan Giles, who, when he sits the butterfly guard, is shorter than Muhammad's knees. It's ridiculous.
Muhammad is he a tall guy?
6'4".
He's fucking tall.
And he's 130 plus kilos at that point. Giant.
Yeah.
Like just mass. And yeah, he just wanders into Lockie's guard and Lockie's like, okay, I'm going to do this. And he's like, oh, no, I won't do that. Wanders back in again. Lockie's like, I'm doing it this time, bro. And just goes. And within 2 minutes, he's heel hooked Muhammad Ali.
Same 50-50 inside heel hook.
Right. Incredible. And it is the story of the tournament because it brings you back to skill over size. This technique and this position can beat a much bigger opponent and disable them.
Yeah.
And even the guys he beat were like, dude, well done. Like, incredible. It's almost unbelievable. Even though jiu-jitsu trades off this myth of, like, smaller guy beats bigger guy. We know if big guy knows jiu-jitsu, he's going to wreck you.
Yeah.
You know, it's only better if small guy knows a lot of jiu-jitsu, big guy doesn't.
Yeah.
But in this instance...
Big girl, sorry, apologies. Yeah.
Because obviously there's good examples of smaller women, like Gabby Garcia losing to Miss SoCal, mixed accent.
Oh, Mackenzie.
Mackenzie, too.
Mackenzie.
Mackenzie. Went from Miss California to Miss Brazil real quick. But she's incredible. She's incredible at jiu-jitsu, and seeing her tap Gabby was mind-blowing. But
yeah, that's right. Like, if you're the smaller person and you're fighting someone bigger and they don't know jiu-jitsu, yes, you have a great advantage.
For sure.
But if they've got some skills, then the mass is going to help them.
And I feel like also the change in the way that jiu-jitsu is delivered, Instagram, BJJ Fanatics, you can access this information, right? You can get Craig Jones's leg lock DVD. You can, you know, or like download or online access. You can consume all this information very easily. The ease of access to information is far greater in the modern jiu-jitsu era. So I feel that's accelerated this change in the game with leg locks too.
Yeah, I think just looking at the leg lock piece, and this is really a comment for people who haven't been in the game for as long, there's probably, at least not in my time, which is, 14 years or so we've been in the game.
Yes.
There's never been anything as revolutionary in terms of changing the fundamentals of the game as this explosion of leg locks.
Yes.
Because now what can happen is if you are not trained in them, and this is coming from, I'm not particularly trained in them. If you're not trained in them, you can go to a gym and a white belt who has been training in them, you know, in a disciplined way for 6 months will catch you.
Yes.
You know, as a black belt, and it's like, holy shit, like there's never been that level. There's never been such a technical development that's enabled someone with so much inexperience beat someone so experienced.
Yes.
Right? And so it's revolutionized the game in that way, so that you have to go and study that shit. Like if you want to be competitive and you want to be, you know, whatever, like you want to be, you want to understand the game and be able to be competitive at your level, you have to know it.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd say on this is like, so Grappling Industries is a competition series. It's not, you know, it's the kind of counterpoint to the IBJJF. They allow leg locks. Like yeah, if right. you say, okay, I'm going to enter the advanced section of like blue belt and up, you can do heel hooks. And so people are like mad. So Grappling Industries blew up. You know, David Aguzzi, who's the kind of the mastermind behind it, and Ben Hodgkinson, who's like president of the Australian arm of that, they are killing the IBJJF comps. That's why the IBJJF had to change their format to accommodate it.
Yeah, right.
Because they were losing market share.
Yeah, right.
It's got so popular.
Grappling Industries do events all around the world?
Yeah, they do events all over the world.
Wow.
You know, they're not sponsoring this, but man, shout out. They changed the game because they facilitated it, and now the IBJJF has had to change.
Yeah, right.
Because they're like, dang, people want to play leg locks. We better allow it.
Yeah.
That's why at Brown and Black you can now do heel hooks and you can reap and all of that. And that's a total game. That's a total 180 degree turn around on where it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you can't train no gi the same way that you used to. You can't just like, oh, I do gi and I do my no gi game the same. You can't. There's people who are just training gi now and they're beasts. And you've got people who are like, nah, I'm staying on this gi tip. And it's kind of diverging in a lot of ways because you have to have different approaches. And it's cool in a lot of ways, but it also makes it harder. Because before you'd come to jiu-jitsu and oh, I learn in the gi, I learn in no gi, you know, it's cool. I don't have to be an Olympic rocket scientist of jiu-jitsu to be able to compete at blue belt.
Yeah.
But that this is, I guess, the evolution of many things. And I think I've seen it, you know, in the 14 years we've been in the game, I feel this has had the biggest impact on changing the jiu-jitsu landscape.
Absolutely.
Huge.
Yeah, no doubt. Maybe in another episode you could give us like a – it would be cool for you to break down because you are the in-house jiu-jitsu technician.
Cool. Well, thank you for saying
so. I'm the charismatic and funny guy. You're the jiu-jitsu technician.
sure. Yeah. I'll accept that. Fine.
You could give us a breakdown on like technically what are the – like what are we looking to do, like where the common mistakes are for people like wandering into a no-gi match or a no-gi role versus a gi role.
Yeah, and that'd look, cool. I'm not going to say, oh, you know, I'm so great at leg locks, but I do understand the differences because
– you fucking have an amazing grasp on this. I'm sure you're not where you would like to be.
No, but I've been very fortunate because every time Craig would come back from DDS before he actually kind of migrated full-time and now has B team.
Defected.
Defected. Well, actually kind of hijacked. He's kind of like, hey, you guys sick of Gordon? Me too. Come with me. Come to the promised land. We'll go to Texas and we won't pay taxes and we'll all have guns. Hooray.
It does look pretty fun.
Yeah, no, they have a good time. And you know, I'm sure it's a great training environment. But the thing is, which is very interesting to me, Craig would come back and say, nah, we're not doing this anymore. That doesn't work. It's like, hang on. How can you say that? And then he would just demonstrate. He'd just be like, man, it doesn't work like this, it doesn't work like this. And then, you know, they'd test the theories out. Lachlan would do something similar. He's like, yeah, man, that's not effective for this. This is effective for that. So in real time, people far smarter than me were solving those problems. So I really benefited from being like, okay, well, I guess I'll trust what you say because you are leg locking everyone. I don't need to be as good as you to understand you know what is going on with this piece of knowledge. And look, also, you know, shout out to my man, Jeremy Paul Skinner. He's a student of the leg lock game. He's here at Grappling Education.
JPS, when we rolled out, he put me in a leg in town. I was like, I got no fucking idea what's going on.
It's a pretzel.
And he kind of just looked at him and then he was like, boop. And I was like,
you know, he's a smart guy, you know. And, you know, they've got a really good program out at Sydney West Martial Arts as well. He's out there too.
Is he?
Yeah, he trains out there. Shout out to Luke, who who Leglock Luke, who runs Luke. That. He's, you know, he trains under Danaher as well.
Look, does he?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize.
He was just in Texas recently. I chatted to him about it. It's interesting because people are like, this is possibly a future of jiu-jitsu in terms of it being exciting, performance-oriented, and the ADCC is now becoming more of a thing.
Yeah.
It is now at its zenith. It is in Las Vegas.
Fuck, this next
it's
event
is full stadium,
fire, bro.
And I'm really hoping I can be there. Like, I will be in Vegas when the tournament is on. As to whether or not I'll be in the venue, my goal is to be able to be in there, do some interviews, get it on the podcast, and talk to people who win, give you guys correspondence on how it went down, you know, to actually give a bit of insight. That's the hope. As to whether or not it happens, we'll see.
Dudes, send an Instagram DM right now to Moa Sim saying we want JT in the house, the arena, competing, but doing media shit at ADCC.
I tried to apply for a media pass. You used to be able to, but Flow Grappling have got it locked down. They got exclusivity. Fucking Teague.
Hey, guys, we're out here at the thing. Okay, super excited. Let's get into it.
Lame-os. they're so lame. I challenge all of Flow Grappling to grappling matches. They can't grapple for shit. Even Teague, it's like, I'll grapple you, bro. Like, you guys ain't shit. Like, at least I could throw down. Like, you guys got nothing, you suckers. Once our podcast is bigger than your whole media organization, I'm coming for you.
Bam, let's sign it off there. Guys, I don't mind a bit of Flow Grappling personally. I don't know if any...
Fuck those guys. No. Don't get me on this. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah, tune in for next week to see JT rip him a new one. Hey, guys, if you want help for your jiu-jitsu training, we can help to make you as strong and as mobile as possible. We have an amazing program. It's online. You can do a free trial of it. Trial goes for 7 days. And then if you want to kick on, follow it, get super strong and mobile, go to bulletproof.bjj.com. Use the code BJJPODCAST when you sign up and you'll get 20% off your subscription. You'll also get exclusive access to JT and I, and we'll help you with the training. And we look forward to welcoming you guys into the community. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.